gone. The difference does it make where it's gone? The difference does it make where it's gone? You'd better not go rushing off after glamour, Bart. You belong right here in Hollywood. And as far as the girls who want glamour are concerned, here's a little story. A girl, you'd know her name if I mentioned it, came to Hollywood from a little town in the Middle West. She worked hard, went hungry sometimes, and after several years of extra work and bit parts, she finally got her break. She became a big star. She made a lot of money. She had an enormous house with a swimming pool, butlers, maids, everything she could possibly wish for. But do you think that girl was happy? I mean, really happy?
Well...
You're darn right she was.
That's the trouble with Hollywood, Joan. I'm tired of the sybaritic life. I'm tired of seeing the same faces. I'm tired of doing the same things. I'm tired of the eternal sameness of it. I want to go places.
Well, Bart, how about taking me out to dinner tonight?
I'm tired.
Oh, now, Bart, that's not the true you. It really doesn't take much effort to take me out to dinner, does it?
Well, if you put it that way, Joan, can you give me one reason why I should take you out to dinner?
I'm hungry.
Make it two reasons.
What's the matter with you? You never used to be like this.
Well, frankly, with this new 5% victory tax, a man has to economize, don't you agree?
Absolutely, Bart, and so does a woman. That's why I want you to buy me a dinner.
What do you think of the 5% victory tax, Joan?
Well, I always say, income taxes, out go axes.
Say, that's a very good thing to say.
Well, now that I've said it, I wonder. Income taxes, out go axes. Cute phrase, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Makes people smile, that's one good thing about it. Oh, it's so easy, so very easy for us here at home to make glib speeches like that. But it's you men in Africa, you men in China, India, and the Solomons, and heaven only knows where. It's you men who have to see to it that out go axes. It's your job, and we here at home know in our heart of hearts that there's nothing we can possibly do to equal it. But there's nothing we aren't ready to give up and sacrifice willingly in the way of comfort, money, and time to reduce the sweat, blood, and tears that must be spent before you have accomplished our goal, absolute victory. You men will never know what our Army, our Navy, our Marine Corps, and our Coast Guard mean to us, because most of us are embarrassed by what we consider to be sentimentality. And few of us are great poets. For that's what it takes. A poet and a very great poet to tell you men what we at home feel about every one of you. God bless you.
There is hardly a person listening over here, or who will listen later over there, who doesn't know the famous creator of the Believe It or Not cartoons, Robert L. Ripley. And tonight, we take great pleasure in introducing, or rather reintroducing, a man who has seen Ripley's cartoons in the paper quite often, Clifton Fadiman.
Well, Jimmy, I certainly wish I were Bob Ripley tonight, because I have some Believe It or Nots that are really very unusual.
Well, what are they about, Mr. Fadiman?
War stamps. Every patriotic American is buying them. But not every American is turning in his stamp albums for war bonds. Why, right now, lying around in homes and offices are more than 100 million partly filled war stamp books, believe it or not.
100 million? That's a lot of stamp books.
And they mean a lot of war bonds, too. If within the next few days every one of those stamp books were filled and turned into war bonds, our country would have at least 1 billion war bond dollars right there, believe it or not.
And that money would certainly buy a lot of fighting equipment.
For one thing, it would buy 5,000 bomber planes, believe it or not.
Well, then it's certainly up to us to fill up our stamp books and turn them in for war bonds right away.
Think of it this way, ladies and gentlemen. A parachute, a tank, a plane is waiting to be finished until you finish filling your stamp book and turn it in for a war bond. The war moves along, and we here at home must keep in step. Fill up every one of those 100 million stamp books, exchange them for war bonds, and chalk up another big victory on the home front next week. Miss Jane Froman, and a new tune from the indigo-steeped pen of Duke Ellington. It's called Don't Get Around Much Anymore.
When I'm not playing solitaire, I take a book down from the shelf. And what with programs on the air, I keep pretty much to myself. Miss the Saturday dance. Heard they crowded the floor. Couldn't bear it without you. Don't get around much anymore. Thought I'd visit the club. Got as far as the door. They'd have asked me about you. Don't get around much anymore. Darling, I guess my mind's all at ease. But nevertheless, why stir up memories? Gone, but what for? Awfully different without you. Don't get around much anymore. Darling, I guess my mind's more at ease. But nevertheless, why stir up memories? Been invited on day. Might have gone, but what's wrong? Awfully different without you. Don't get around.
Next, to the news department for a summary of the week back home, prepared especially for our shortwave listeners abroad. Our reporter, John W. Vandercook.
Someone once said that one of the worst things about war was that so much of it was spent in merely waiting. Great armies are like any other champions. They do not win victories every day. This week around the world has seen plenty of action, but none of it, even in amazing Russia, has been really conclusive. Down in the Solomons, hard, slugging haymakers have been exchanged with almost rhythmic regularity between the Japanese and the American Air Forces. Without self-praise, the concluding words of the speech with which the President are probably not very far from the simple truth. Said the President, as we face that continuing task, we may know that the state of this nation is good. The heart of this nation is sound. The spirit of this nation is strong. The faith...
Surely a major headline in the musical news of the season is the one that read, Critics acclaim James Melton in Metropolitan debut. American tenor scores in Mozart opera. Enter Jim Melton, his song, The Trumpeter.
Trumpeter, what are you sounding now? Is it the call I'm seeking? You'll know the call, said the trumpeter call, when my trumpet goes a-speaking. I'm rounding them up, I'm waking them up, to the tents of stirring valley, and then no more sleep with sadness deep. For I'm sounding the old are you sounding now? Is it the call I'm seeking? Can't mistake the call, said the trumpet at all, when my trumpet goes a-speaking. I've armed in a man, they're scampering on, the telling of fools like thunder. There's a maddening shout as the sabers flash out. For I'm sounding the charge.
Contribution to the current great chorus of speculation regarding the world of the future. You see, we are anxious that our soldier listeners shall know that all of us over here are resolved that their sacrifice shall not this time fail of permanent meaning through any fault of ours. Tonight you'll hear a brief summary of one statesman's thinking on the principles of a just peace. Our contributor is Ezequiel Padilla, Secretary of Foreign Affairs for our good neighbor, Mexico. His words will be read by Herbert Marshall in Hollywood. Mr. Marshall.
25 years ago, the victory of the Allies led us to believe that peace would last for ages. A single generation, however, has been sufficient to let loose another war, even more cruel and destructive than the first. What the world failed to achieve in that period between wars was organized justice for all peoples. And that single omission has brought back to raging life all the evils we believe we had forever laid to rest. This time, when peace comes, what will it bring? Today, the conquests of modern science and technology are changing our whole lives before our very eyes. Applied science has ensured for man mastery over nature. This war is being fought to determine how that mastery shall be used, whether in the interests of slavery or in the interests of freedom. Naturally, in such a struggle, the common man has a tremendous stake. He now claims a right to share in the benefits of man's conquest of nature, to which he has contributed, after all, most of the back-breaking toil. So it comes about that a clamor for justice arises from all over the world. There is in the mind of the common man a stubborn determination that this time there shall be no peace without justice for him, no prosperity without liberty. But it is one thing to talk in broad terms. It is another to translate them into workable human institutions. How are we going to do that? If war calls for united action, peace calls for it no less. Just as today, for victory, the 28 United Nations must count mainly on four great armies, those of the United States, Britain, China, and Russia, so also tomorrow the world must look to certain nations for leadership in formulating a workable peace. Last time, a decisive part of this leadership came from Europe, and the peace did not last. This time, humanity must look to the Americas, which have already proved at Rio that society can be organized between nations on a peaceful, democratic basis. Among the world's hopes, then, for a lasting peace, the best, the most dependable, and the most positive will be the material resources, the planning ability, and the social thinking represented by the Union of the Peoples of the Americas.
Here. We'll continue in just a moment with Groucho Marx, Joan Bennett, James Belton, Jane Froman, Clifton Fadiman, Nancy Kelly, and David Brookman's Treasury Orchestra. We pause now for station identification. Clifton Fadiman again in New York, addressing both our audiences over here and over there. To you millions at home listening now, this is for you and yours. To you hundreds of thousands who will listen later on all the fighting fronts, this is for you in humble gratitude and with all our love.
Thank you.
Jane Froman had a song with a message for Private Jones and for a million or more Private Jones.
You'd be so nice to console me. You'd be so nice by the fire, while the breeze on high sang a lullaby. You'd be under an August moon burning above, you'd be so nice, you'd be paradise to come home to.
Children?
Four children.
And who are you? And what are you doing with my children?
You don't know my children, and my children are yours.
That's what I
hope you'll be careful. I'll be thinking of you out there, trudging over hill and dale, battling your way through water and then the sand.
John, papers will be full of John Thorndike's victory. They will tell how John Thorndike defeated the elements. How he won out. A Thorndike never fails, maybe. Never.
I'll lay out your things.
What'd you say?
I'll lay out your things.
Am I dead?
No, John. You're very much alive. And you're fair and square and true and blue and brave and bold.
And Lum and Abner. You'll be proud when I return. Fetch me my son, I return. Fetch me my son, I return. Fetch me my son, I return. Muddy, I can slide home. Muddy, I can slide home.
He'd love it. He's a born in country. Oscar. Oscar's our son, dear.
I thought Olive was our son. Then who's Oscar? Then who's Oscar? Then who's Oscar?
It's our daughter. We have two children, John.
Then who are you?
I'm your wife, John, and I love you with all my heart. I know you're hiding your fear. You don't want me to know how dangerous this trip is. There'll be a big parade for you when you return, John. If you return. You will return, won't you?
Please, Mary, don't carry on. Let me see, have I got everything? Yes, I have everything. Turn your head, Mary, so you won't see me leave.
Oh, John, I can't turn my head.
Stiff again, eh? I'll tell you what I'll do, Mary. I'll pay you a pretty compliment. That'll turn your head.
Oh, John, you can't go. You can't go. I won't let you. I won't let you.
Have no fear, Mary. The time will fly. I promise you on my word of honor. Just as soon as I find that golf ball I lost this afternoon, I'll come right home.
Oh, John, will you really?
It may be a little late, Mary. I'm going to stop off and pick up a new bag.
Oh. Oh, I see. So I'm not good enough for you anymore. Oh, John.
Mary.
On December 7th, 1941, 7 million men and women in this country were directly employed in war production. By the end of 1943, that number must be increased to more than 20 million. Your country faces the greatest manpower shortage in its history. It needs men and women now. It needs you, ladies and gentlemen, to build those tanks, guns, planes, and ships that we didn't have the morning after Pearl Harbor. We're getting them now, though, in ever-increasing numbers. But we need more and more men and women to turn them out. And in order to get the right workers in the right jobs at the right time, the Office of War Information has two important messages for you tonight. Listen carefully. The first concerns people who are living where there is no shortage of war workers. Do not attempt to move to a crowded war center to get a war job. For they don't have enough houses or schools or streetcars or buses to take care of more outsiders. So don't add to the confusion by going there. Go instead to the United States Employment Service office and register. So that when a war job does open up for you, they'll have your application and record right there before them. Our second message tonight applies to people whose present job is not a war job and who are living in industrial areas where there is a shortage of war workers. You, sir, should switch over to a war job as soon as you can. Simply go to the office of the United States Employment Service nearest you. You'll find the address in your telephone book. But they know what war jobs are open and where they are. They charge no fees. They have no favorites. Even if you're a retired worker or a handicapped worker, no matter what your race or creed, there's a war job for you. Because total war is everybody's war, men and women alike. For women are needed to take men's jobs and free them for the fighting fronts. Housewives and women in non-war jobs, your country needs you, too. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, if you can't fight on the firing line, you can and must fight on the production line. So go to your nation 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 line. So go to your nil. Do soldiers like so-called serious music? The folks who have charge of preparing shortwave programs and rebroadcasts for the troops tell us that they do get a large number of requests for operatic and symphonic compositions. As our own first venture in this department, we've asked Jim Melton to sing for us an aria from Manon. It's called A Fouillet du Simage. I suspect that some of our listeners in French North Africa may be capable of translating that title into A Wayfair Image. James Melton and an aria from Manon.
j'aime encore au beau sacré que m'apporte la foi. Oui, j'ai voulu mettre Dieu même entre l'amour et moi.
Encore dans la fonte de mon corps.